All right, welcome everybody. Good morning everyone. We're here to talk about life hacks for surviving hospital when you're blind or vision impaired. I'm Fiona Woods and I wrote the description of this part of the program, but I forgot to insert my own name, so you might be surprised that I'm chairing this session. Anyway, I'm very pleased to have you all here to talk to about this topic today. Susan Thompson has a series of life hacks going on in BC News, and we thought hospitals is an area where I think of the National Policy Council, in the last year, at least five of us have been in hospital for various reasons, and it's an area of our lives that we don't talk a lot about and we don't probably think a lot about, but when we're there, it's the only thing that matters. So we thought it was a good idea to try and bring it back a bit more into focus today. The objectives for today are we're going to hear a little bit about Martin Stewart's most recent experiences in hospital and how he's got some ideas on some hacks that he might have developed there. And we're going to learn a bit about a project that Helen Badge, who's here with us, and I'll introduce her a bit more later, and Susan Thompson are working on, to learn from people's experiences of what happens to them in hospital and to find ways to improve things for them. And we hope that as part of this session, we can come up with some ways that systems of the hospitals can work better for all of us, and to develop some strategies we can use in case we find ourselves in hospital. This is a bit of background. The National Policy Council is working on updating and broadening our health services policy. We have got a hospitals policy that was, I think, written in about 2010, and a health services policy from 2006. And there's a lot of very useful information and helpful information in there, but a lot of things have changed since those times, like a lot more information is electronic. A lot of things haven't changed, but we're just going to broaden the policy, and we're also, later on, going to be looking at other elements of the healthcare system beyond hospitals. But we felt that that was a rather too broad topic to try and sort out in 50 minutes. So we're sticking today to hospitals. I think we should really just start. I'm hoping there'll be some time for questions at the end. And I will say that although everyone does have their own experiences of hospitals, and those are important and it can be important to talk about them, we probably don't have time to talk too much about people's personal stories today. But what we're trying to do is find the ideas behind that and the experiences behind that that are universal and that can lead us to some ideas for improving things. So I'm going to hand over to Martin, who's going to talk to us about his most recent experiences. I don't think really, after last night and this morning, I'm sorry, I don't think I need to introduce Martin Stewart, do I?
Thanks, everyone, for coming this morning. I get the chance to talk about my personal experiences at hospitals. And I think the first thing I wanted to say is that, you know, the feeling when you meet a social worker and you think, oh, everything's going to be all right, they'll understand. I think the same for the hospitals. You think, oh, that's good, I'm in the care and comfort zone here, we'll be right. Sadly, when it comes to blind and vision impaired patients, our patience is tested, because so many of us have negative stories, negative experiences, and the understanding that should have happened doesn't happen. I've had both, the positives and negatives, the care, the careless. In one of my most recent experiences in November last year, the first problem came with the reconnaissance of the room, and the nurse left a power cord across a door. Oh dear, we knew we were in trouble. But things, it was like a roller coaster ride, really. It went up and down, around, good and bad. There's all aspects of hospital care, and it starts from the beginning, in my view, with us. Take advantage of the pre-op meetings. Make sure there's good, precise notes. But even before then, in my view, there is the pre-planning. that we can influence. I say it's like a fire plan. In the Dandenong Ranges, where I live, we have to have a fire plan. We're all familiar with it, and we act upon it. So far, 3 times for me, been evacuated. And I reckon we should all have a pre-hospital plan, because a lot of hospital visits are unplanned. Get your notes ready with about 5, no more, I reckon, no more than 5 things that you would like if you ever were at hospital. What you think should be the priority for your care. One of the first things is whether to or whether not to have signage on your bedhead. And if you're going to have signage, make sure it's agreed upon words. I had the term legally blind, and I thought, what's that? And I thought it was legal, but maybe I'm not. Maybe I am. What's legal? Legally blind is one of those terms that I know is generic, but just doesn't get it, because it implies that you have some sight when I have none. So I just accepted it, I must say. But I did express, I wish we'd have had a chat about this. I did talk about the fact I wanted signage, but they wrote it before I got there. Oh, thank you. So this, like a passport, a personal passport that you could arrange yourself. There's also now the My Health, the new one, you know, the one that everyone's talked about with the on the internet?
The electronic.
My health record.
My health record. Thanks, I forgot the record. Yes, put some notes in it. Why not? There's the opportunity to do it. Give, once again, your top 5 priorities. So there's the pre-planning that we can influence. Talking about the experience of hospital, there's daycare. Daycare. You know, when someone says, make sure you have someone to pick you up or else we can't let you go. Problem is, we've found that sometimes they say, but not a blind person, even if they're your partner. Yes, we've had reports that it's got to be anyone else except a blind person, even if they don't know you. That's fine. If they've got sight, yep, they're verified. Not good enough, hospital system. So tell them in advance they are to be accepted. There's also access to information. You know, the information about which you have to sign. That should always be available in alternative formats. But it's not. So you've got to plan for that. Yes, we're not in a utopia yet. We're working on it. BCA NPC is truly working on it for our members, and you'll get the opportunity for input. There is a difference between pre-planned and unplanned visits, for sure, and those differences can be highlighted in the experiences that we have because they're unplanned. So when you get into the hospital, unplanned, where's my belongings? And that's part of your sense of well-being, and your recovery time is definitely influenced by how you're treated. And simple things like the things that you are familiar with being put just 1 foot further than you can reach. You know what it's like. And someone comes in to test your temperature or blood pressure, which has probably gone up because of some of the experiences you're having, and they move the tray away. And then you can't find the call button to get it moved back. And then the caterer comes in, hasn't spoken to you, and your food comes and goes without you touching it. We all know, we all know. I'm glad to say in my last experience that side of things did improve at the Alfred, no advertisements intended. The caterers were allowed to talk and connect, but I said from the very beginning, so they should be, because there was a statewide edict that that doesn't happen, that shouldn't happen. Don't talk to the patients, just deliver the food. Well, I had a lot to say about that one. So things are changing. I also found in my last experience that the call button was closer, was attached to the bed, couldn't fall off. And so were the television controls and the bed controls are closer. You can move the bed up and down. You can... don't press the eject button. The windows are pretty thick. You'd have to hit them hard to get out. Yes, they have started to think about access to those vital pieces of functionality. The experiences are also becoming something that people want to compile, the notes. And that's a good thing. The Alfred Hospital are now setting up what's called the Vulnerable Persons Initiative. And that is something that every one of us can participate in creating. The notes depend upon us. Please look at my contact in your information that you've been given for this convention to get details on Karen Roberts, who is running this. She actually said to me, oh, make sure you tell them that we've only started. I said, I definitely will, because that's where we want to be, at the ground floor. Thanks for the good thing that it's only just begun. She thought it was bad. She thought that wasn't good. You know, we're not established yet. I said, great, we can shape it as we will. So that involves three hospitals, Sandringham and Alfred, and you know what? I forget the other. But never mind. Doesn't matter. Caulfield, that's the one. So I say, whether you are from Victoria or any other state, let's feed her this information, because she needs to hear about our experiences, where we believe things should improve. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Martin. I knew that that would be a very positive session. I remember the first time I ever went to hospital that I can remember, having been lots of times as a baby. I went into an unknown hospital in a lot of pain, and the doctor was really angry with me, and he kept saying to me, what have you taken? What have you taken? And it was only quite a long time later that I realised he didn't know I was blind, and he thought he was looking at my eyes, getting to a response. And I couldn't work out why he was so angry with me. But anyway... See, I did get one of my experiences in too. We all want to share them. Next, I want to introduce two people who are going to share their discussion, because they're working on a project together. I believe the buzzwords these days are co-design, and it's a co-design project between Helen Badge, who's a research fellow with the Agency of Clinical Innovation in New South Wales. Helen is an occupational therapist, and she's also taken a role as carer for various people, and she can explain to you her interest in this project or how this came about. And she's been working with Susan Thompson, who's a longtime BCA member and advocacy officer with Vision Australia. Again, another person who I believe has spent a lot of time introducing herself this morning, in terms we know a lot about her background, so I don't need to really do that again. So Helen and Susan, it's over to you.
Thanks, Fiona. We're really pleased to be here today and have this chance to talk to you about our project. What we like about this project is it actually was initiated by an orthoptist in a hospital in Sydney at Bankstown Hospital. And what she observed, which is exactly what Martin was describing, was that people that were blind or had low vision, including people who had stroke-related vision impairment, which is where she was working, received different experiences around their care. Sometimes it was good, sometimes it wasn't so good, but that it wasn't consistent. And that meant that either people missed out on things, like dinners come up quite a lot in our project, or they had to really strongly advocate for themselves or have someone who would do so. And what we're trying to do is sort of use that experience to inform how can we make things better. So it's really actually a quite a positive project. When Kate Thompson, who's a orthoptist who observed this, came to an Agency for Clinical Innovation workshop around this special method called experience-based co-design, which is a fancy way of saying that people with lived experience have a unique contribution to make, and if you work with the providers of a service, that it's going to hopefully achieve a much more powerful outcome. So we were able to get some support to run this project, and Susan and myself and a number of other people are really part of a team. So I think today we're speaking on behalf of that team to talk to you about our project. And really what it's involved is, particularly through Vision Australia, we've been able to hear the experiences and stories of a quite large number of people who are blind or have low vision who've been in hospital. So we ran a couple of focus groups with people from around New South Wales. We did some interviews, or one-on-one interviews with people about their experiences. We've gone to the stroke recovery group for the Bankstown Hospital and spoke to about four or five people who also had vision loss. So we've compiled what we call an experience map that sort of maps the range of experiences from when you first arrive in hospital to when you get ready and leave hospital. And what we've also done is spoken to the hospital staff about their experience of looking after someone who's blind or has a problem with their vision in hospital. So two sides of the story, if you like. And what was sad about it was that there was this quite universal experience of bad things that happened from the point of admission to the point of discharge, with a few gems of it's okay when it works in between. But what our project's trying to do is turn those experiences into, well, if that's the negative experience, or we know what the positive experience is, how can we describe success and then set that as our benchmark for what we want to try and achieve in the project? So at this point, I might pass over to Susan just to describe to you the main themes that we've started to pull out from our project.
Okay. Am I on mic?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks, Helen. I mean, it's interesting when Helen says, you know, it's a co-design is a fancy term for listening to people and trying to make things better. I mean, nothing in this project that we learned is new to me, but it's great to actually hear the richness of the kind of feedback that Helen got in the interviews and the focus groups from a whole range of people, in a range of ages and a range of how long they've had a vision impairment, etc. Because, I mean, it's one thing for the likes of me to have heard it all before, but actually having it coming from the horse's mouths, as it were, is really, it enriches the information. So in the focus groups, the information that came out of the focus groups kind of fell into six main themes. And these were hospital admission and giving consent, communication between patients and hospital staff, staff awareness and understanding about the needs of people who are blind or have low vision, orientation to the wards and hospital environment, looking after yourself, independence and mobility, and preparing for being discharged from hospital. We don't probably have time today to go through all the feedback that we received. But firstly, that's the six main themes that kind of the information fell neatly into. The first theme around a hospital admission and giving consent and the discharge process really basically came down to a lack of access to printed information. Which won't be new to any of us. You know, there were also some issues in admission around, when you didn't have the form, you know, could you get a private space where someone could fill it in? them expecting that you'd have someone to come with you to do it for them, to save them, for you to save them the trouble. That those kind of sort of sentiments came out. And in the discharge theme, again, it's often about being given printed information that that you obviously couldn't read. Therefore, there were consequences to that about not knowing, what the medical instructions are on your leaving hospital and that sort of thing. Helen, am I kind of encapsulated that, do you think? Anything you'd like to add to what we learned?
I think that last point was probably the most crucial. That certainly I was surprised, maybe you guys weren't, that the consequences of that lack of information were actually potentially very serious for people. So we heard of people who were told, just look out for if there's a bubble in your needle when you're injecting yourself. They didn't know that they needed to take specific medication, missing follow-up in terms of medical follow-up after discharge. So they're obviously very serious problems. And then I think that you're right, the big one was around just that. Do you get information that's useful and accessible when you need it and you have it yourself? You don't need to have someone else to tell you your own business.
So, Helen, the other three main themes, would you like to take us through sort of one of the major ones, which I really think is about communication with hospital staff? And the other theme around orientation. I think that, to my mind, those were the two standout ones for me.
Sure, and I think you're right. We got the most feedback on those two things. So communication was a really major one, and that started around whether or not you should or shouldn't have a sign to say, I'm a person who's blind or has vision impairment. Some people definitely wanted a sign, and some people said, no way, you've got to be kidding. And really when we looked at, when we've had some more recent workshops with both staff and people with lived experience, our definition of success was around you should have the choice how you would let staff know that you have a problem with your vision, so that some people who wanted a sign could get one and others didn't, could negotiate a different way of letting staff know that they had a problem with their vision. We also talked about, regardless of that, that hospitals should have some way of keeping track in terms of the handover from shift to shift that this person is blind or has low vision. And one of the things that came out of the stories was that some staff, you'd get a new changeover of shift and people would arrive and they had no idea you couldn't see. So that consistency was a really strong message around communication of that. Then the other sorts of things were around giving that audio description of information. So, there's a whole lot of information and decision-making that happens during a stay in hospital, and it's about making sure that people who are blind or have low vision have access to enough information. Certainly on the stroke ward, they were saying, well, we give people basically entire booklets of information in print that are then completely inaccessible for someone who can't read printed material. And as well as that, that decision-making around tests and medical procedures and discharge planning, that there's good conveying of information during the hospital stay.
So just to give you a little bit more detail, I suppose, the focus groups had we didn't decide that this were the six themes that we were going to do, but that's kind of where the information just fell into.
And then second to that, I think sort of related to the problems with communication, were around that staff awareness of understanding of the needs of people who are blind and have low vision. And I will put my hands up. I thought, I'm an OT, I'm a carer, I probably have an okay idea. And I really realised I had no understanding of how much I rely on my vision without being aware of that. When it's an automatic function, I don't even consider that I can navigate my way through. So certainly I think staff awareness and understanding was a really big theme that people just didn't, you know, perceive that the staff didn't get it, and I would certainly put myself in that basket. And the first day I arrived at the ward, in fact, to meet with some of the staff, there were three beds in the middle of the corridor. There were machines down both sides of the wall. There were about 20 people. There were various signs and notice boards on every single wall, and I thought, I can't even get through and I can see it. And so it sort of, it flagged that, well, how on earth are you expected to get around if you can't see, when I can't do it when I can see.
And a bit, you know, in a strange environment, like a hospital,
yeah,
in particular.
That's right, in an environment when you don't know. And the other thing that's come out is that you're also dealing with those things when you're sick. You know, no one goes into hospital when they're particularly well, so that you might be having lots of medication or you might be very unwell on top of then the problems you have because you can't see. In terms of that staff awareness, I think that knowing that, you know, you need to have the call bell placed somewhere where you you know where it is and you can reach it, not moving your belongings around so that every time you go to find something it's in a different place, was a big part. I think some of our themes really overlapped, so that staff awareness and knowledge around the impact of being blind in an unfamiliar place really fed into what it's like to get around, to look after yourself, the level of information you need.
We heard one horror story too from a lady who was in hospital with chronic pain, and they didn't show her where her pain pump was, or they moved it. I think that's what it was. And I mean, this is, you know, a very competent, intelligent lady, but you know, she's in hospital with pain, and they moved the pain pump.
We also, you know, we found that some staff were giving good information and were awareness, but again, it was that inconsistency. There were different attitudes to people bringing guide dogs into hospital that they were telling us about. Some were being questioned about that. And so, you know, that's painted a big picture that we need to somehow allow staff to develop that sort of experiential knowledge of what it's like to not be able to see when you're in hospital, because if you can see, that you may just not have had that experience. One of the other things that's come out of the staff thing is that, of course, they also were battling a very high workload with increasingly smaller numbers of staff, or that's certainly the perception, that for every decision to provide help, they need to not do something. And so the staff were certainly talking about, we sort of know that they sometimes need more help if you can't see, but we're really in a sticky position about, well, how do we deliver it all every shift, every day?
And interestingly, it sort of came out, it often came out as almost defensiveness about having this great mass of negative experiences that everybody had articulated. So, you know, like when you read into it, it's, you know, you can recognise that some of it is about time pressure and lack of resources. But it was interesting to kind of see the defensiveness that came out a bit.
One of the things I like about this project is what we are able to do is actually look at those experiences and say, well, how do we define success? So for this one, it was around that actually there are probably opportunities to reduce the time it takes if you give people the right information and the right orientation in the first place, that you can actually free up some of that staff time to do the care and provide that extra information. The orientation to the ward and hospital was a big one, and I think Martin mentioned that before, that if you don't know where you are, then you need help to go to the toilet. Or some people talked about, I just didn't shower because I couldn't work out where the towels were or where the taps were. So that was a really big one, not just the immediate ward environment, but also other facilities in the hospital. So other people get to go with their families to the cafe that if you're not told it's there, you might not know it exists. So you'd miss out during your hospital stay. The wards we're working with, we've got two wards actually that are rehabilitation wards, so have a real focus on increasing independence. So to some degree we're working with staff that, while they, Susan mentioned, did get defensive, see themselves as being able to deliver that we encourage independence as much as possible. Our difficulty is that what we're trying to change is a whole of hospital culture around supporting the good experience of people who are blind and have low vision.
And one of the things that when I came to the project, I put my hand up for it very quickly because, you know, I've heard all this stuff over so many years within the blind and low vision community. I've totally lost it now. I feel very strongly that while education and awareness and particularly education, and that's education of disability awareness education is a sort of seems to be thrown out as the panacea for and fix for everything. I feel very strongly that what actually needs to happen, education's great, you know, don't discount it, but there needs to actually be systems in place or processes in place that don't rely on it all being on the success being all about education.
Before we run out of time, I guess what I'd like to share or we'd like to share now is, I guess, where we're up to in the project. So we've had two workshops with people with lived experience and hospital staff to start defining what success looks like. So really the counterpoint to all those negative experiences we've just talked about. Next week, in fact, we'll be emailing out the information around what success looks like as a series of statements that people can essentially vote on, which are their top three things that they think we should focus on in our project. And we'd certainly welcome anyone who's interested to have a look at that information and give us their feedback. I'm around for a small part of the rest of today, and I'm happy for you to share your contact details, and I'm sure Susan wouldn't mind if you contacted her and we can send you out that information. And what we're going to do with that information is look at, with hospital staff and people with lived experience, which are the things that in common we want to solve. And I know one of the hospitals is very, very keen, for example, that people get to choose what they want to eat. They know how to use the interface with that system of ordering meals, and they get the meals that they want, and they know that they've been delivered. So they get to eat what they want. That's when it's still hot.
And they get to eat it full stop.
And they get to eat it at all. They don't miss out on their meals. So that's one example of what success would look like. And we'll be going from our priorities to then a co-design workshop where we together work out how do we fix it. We'll start off in that workshop by saying, let's dream big. You know, we'll fix the health system. We'll change electronic medical records. We'll do electronic discharges. Yeah, it's all right, Martin. Now, some of those things in the context of our little project, we won't be able to achieve in the short term. So we'll have to be sensible about what we can do in the next few months. But I think what we are very keen to do is all of the information we've collected to date, that we can share that with other groups like BCA, like Vision Australia, other health systems, to say we've described the experiences for you. This is the way you can use that experience to improve health services. Certainly one of the things that I think people who've been involved in the project have said is that you, as a person who's blind or has low vision, or certainly my experience as a carer, you get very good at having to advocate for yourself or your family member. You know, you sort of go in prepared for battle. And what we'd like to see is that some of these changes would mean that that advocacy almost isn't needed because the processes are in place that allow you to have a good experience. And so we've also heard that, you know, you get also used to complaining a lot. And then this is a project where really the experience-based co-design is that people are empowered to say, I want to be part of the solution as well, which is what we really like about it, that we've got this really rich picture, as Susan has said, and we really hope it will support some change.
I'd like to thank Martin for giving me my next BCA news article on life hacks, because I think that's what I'm going to do, Martin. I'm going to get to my head together with you and come up with some life hacks for hospital.
Change the world.
Yeah.
One life hack at a time.
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Are we ready to make comments?
I think,
I think we are.
Do you want to say something else?
I just wanted to say one more thing on reconnaissance. I think it's good if you possibly can, on a pre-planned arrangement, to go in the night before to do your reconnaissance. The other thing is privacy. If you want that curtain closed, make sure it gets closed, even if it's all the time. Because as I've explained to hospital staff, we can't see the patient, they can see us. I remember having a very bad experience in that area where I was told if I drank through that straw one more time, I'd have it shoved down my throat. Wow, I thought. So, you know, if you want the curtain closed all the time, it should be. Thank you.
We will take a few questions. I have a radio mic and hopefully a volunteer to run it around. I would ask that if you have something to say, you wait for the microphone to come and then say who you are and then state your business.
It's Sandra, we believe, from Sydney. It's been a very enlightening discussion this morning. I would also suggest that in as well as trying to change hospital systems, that information regarding this project and its findings be provided or incorporated in some way into nurse education and training through the tertiary institutions that provide training to staff to improve, hopefully, their sensitivity to these issues before they actually start working in the hospitals or as students on placement. The other thing is, building on Martin's comment about going in the night before, I think it's important that we make sure that there's not a them and us sister situation between people going into public hospitals and those going into private hospitals, because I'm sure the private hospital system hasn't even been touched yet. And it is important, I think, to advocate strongly when you know that people having particular medical procedures, even day surgery, they want you to get you in and out. And that's another area, because it's sort of fast action. That if there are some procedures that create particular difficulties for people who are blind, as well as the orientation, asserting one's right to a doctor, going into a private hospital the day before the procedure is useful. And a classic example is having a colonoscopy. I know that people can go into public hospitals the day before to familiarise with themselves and also start the unpleasant procedure. But all in a private hospital, that's not even encouraged.
I think Sandra might stop you there, but I would just say that I think one of the advantages I found with a private hospital is that you usually have your own doctor and the doctor has a relationship with you, and I found that a great benefit to me, because the doctor's quite good at advocating a bit more powerfully possibly than a lowly patient. So I found things worked a lot better in that case. But certainly we don't want a them and us system, and I certainly don't think that's anyone's intention. I suppose it never is. Helen, would you like to respond to the education point?
Could I respond to that?
Yes.
Well, anyone can on this panel, sorry.
Because Helen and I were going, sitting up here after Sandra made that suggestion, going, what a terrific idea. And we've certainly taken that on board. Helen and I were just kind of whispering to each other that, you know, what a good idea that is. And it does, it kind of speaks to that issue of education, and it could be, you know, I mean, just even having some kind of a living document that sets some of that stuff out as well as actually delivering it in a module in nurse education or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lee, go on. Yeah.
What I was going to say is I'm glad we're thinking big and we're not only going to fix the health system but also the education system.
Yes.
But that's exactly the sort of thinking we're bring, is how can we actually achieve this? This is probably a long-term project. That our little project might be small, but obviously it's going to take some time to get these big changes.
But one of the uses...
Can we just see if there's any other comments?
Yeah.
Questions?
Sorry?
I'm just going to see if there's any other questions from the audience.
Right.
Okay, Terry Boyle. I've got perhaps 3 points, if I can remember them all. First one, about signage. Yes, I'd certainly agree it's very important, because if other staff come along and they do not know that you cannot see, they're expecting you to respond to their presence, quite apart from any nonverbal sign language. They are looking for a response from you, and I've often been told, you know, they're actually talking to you, or they're not talking to you. And that goes into the second point, and that is use of name. I've got no objections to people calling me Terry. As a first name, I don't want the whole, you know, title or anything like that, but so that a remark is addressed to me, so that I know that I'm being expected to respond to perhaps that comment or question or what have you. Because sometimes, particularly when you're in a an emergency situation like A&E or whatever, there's not one person, there might be three or four people around you. You're not certain whether they're talking among themselves in terms of asking about this or that, and I've had good experiences and bad experiences, a bit like you, Martin, and saying that sometimes people are very caring and will keep you informed and saying, well, I'm going to do this now and this is what's happening now. But other times, no. And the third point is an example of that in any situation, it's difficult for any of us to remember more than perhaps three comments or three pieces of advice or information that are given to us. If I'm in a situation where it's pre-planned, I'll usually have my Victor Reader or something like that and ask if I might record the comments, the information that's being given to me, because it's amazing just how frequently vital bits of information are forgotten. The more stressful the situation that you are in, the less likely you are to be able to remember perhaps those vital bits of information.
And let's not forget, Terry, hopefully you've had a few drugs while you're in there, so memory might be even more tinted.
Yeah, that's right.
The pain, of course.
When you start thinking about it, you know, somebody might say, well, yeah, we want you to take this tablet three times a day and just take it for a week. Well, there's, in a sense, three bits of information just about one particular item. Well, when there's a whole lot of other relevant information. And yes, I take your point about other patients often being given a whole booklet of information and what have you. So I've got no objection to it, giving the print stuff so I can get a relative to tell me about it later. But, you know,
I think, Terry, will probably find with this project that, like many other things that we do in life, improving the experience for blind and vision impaired people will probably improve the experience for most patients, because almost no patient can remember, you know, the 10 things they're told as they leave the door. So if we come up with a better system for us, we'll be at a better system probably for everybody.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
No.
I might ask you, we've probably got another 10 minutes, so if you can kind of keep them brief. I'm not criticising anyone so far, obviously. Just to make sure everyone gets their turn.
Hello, it's my turn, I think. It's Gaynor Marsh here. Terry actually stole my thunder there. One of the points he made was what I was going to say about when you do put these guidelines together for the staff in the hospital to address you by name, because you could be in a room with three other people in your ward and you don't know whether they're talking to you or the patient in the next bed. And also the other point was, I was going to say that if they're going to do a procedure to you, like shoving a thermometer in your ear, I didn't know about these ear thermometers, and a nurse just suddenly shoves something down my ear and I'm taking your temperature, and I'd never seen them before. But if they just let you know that what they're going to do before they do it and what next moves they're going to make. The other point I was going to make quickly was, I actually have had a few experiences in the hospital over the last 3 years, and the problem with meals arriving and then you come out of the bathroom and you know your breakfast has just disappeared because you didn't know it was there. I solved this with the kitchen staff. I had a consultation with a lady. She came up. This was at St Vincent's Hospital. And she chatted with me and she said, I've solved it for you. What I'll do is I'll put this little blue disc on your tray, which is for most patients that need assistance from the nurse. And sometimes the person needs to be fed, or sometimes they might need a help taking the lids off their orange juice or whatever. And at least when the nurse would come in and say, well, your breakfast's here or your lunch is here, can I help you? I said, I just needed to know that it was there. Thank you very much. Anyway, I haven't got any more to say. I think everyone else has covered it.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah. Camille. Can I just say thank you for sharing that, and that's certainly been really consistent messages that have come through. And some of the positive stuff that's come out is when you do have staff that come up to say, hello, my name is Helen, this is what I'm here for, you know, and speak to you by name and introduce themselves. You know, people have said, boy, it makes a difference for you. You know, you're already anxious because you're in hospital. So the positive benefit of a good experience has been something else that's been really strong.
Next person.
Darren McCarthy. I could see a point of getting input from the doctors themselves, whether the surgeons or the doctors on the ward. It might be handy to get their response as well to what they think, how shortcuts could be made in the hospital sphere. That, no doubt several doctors would have their opinions, and I think you need to take them on board. The reason you need to take them on board is to give it more status and authority when it happens. You've got them behind you.
Yes, I agree with that. It's amazing, though, how many doctors will say, oh, look, I can't really have much of a say here. You'll have to speak to the people on the ward. But if you can get the doctor who is assertive enough to do that, that's really valuable. I wanted to say something about reconnaissance as well, is that when you have arrived and you've done all the work, you've informed, and then you get moved. Yeah. How often does that happen? And you know what? I reckon sometimes it's because they think, oh, well, it doesn't really matter to a blind person. They don't know, you know, can't see their surroundings anyway. When in fact it's for that reason we shouldn't be moved, or at least at a very last resort. So please make sure that that appears as one of the priorities in your notes. I want to be firstly placed in an area where I'm unlikely to be moved. And if you can avoid it, can you please not move me? I had a terrible experience at the Alfred recently on that level. I won't go into it now, but believe me, it was late at night. It's now being resolved through a complaint mechanism. Thank you.
How many more people do we have? We've probably got...
Not lots. We could go all day.
I can probably take two more. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Liz from New South Wales. I understand that your study probably at the moment is focused on those couple of wards that you were talking about in the hospital. I was wondering if there's any thought or extension to mental health facilities. Obviously, when people who are blind or vision impaired are in mental health facilities, perhaps their cognition is affected, certainly their ability to self-advocate, particularly as a result of depression or anxiety, may be zero. Any extension of this work into mental health?
Thanks, Liz. I can't really speak for Helen because her project is for her hospital, but certainly the National Policy Council, I don't know whose speaking device that is, but it would be great if it could be muted. When we started to talk about this with the National Policy Council, and we started to think about, well, if we did hospitals, what other sections do we need to cover? And there were so many different areas of the healthcare system. Mental health is one that a lot of us, you know, would have interactions, but there's, you know, community health systems, and there's alternative medicine. So what we think that we're going to do really is come up with a set of general principles that will apply in all those settings, and then we'll try and come up with some specific guidelines for particular settings, because the issues are the same wherever you go. It's always about consent and privacy and dignity and access to information and access to buildings. So those things will be true wherever, but we will definitely try and extend that out. And thank you very much for drawing that to our attention, because that's why we want to consult with people, because there's always someone who's thought of something that we haven't necessarily specified. One more person, then we'll finish off.
David Ditchfield speaking here. From the point of view, I've got some interference there. I worked in nursing homes for 3 years as a volunteer, and a very serious problem presented to me, and that was the reluctance of a person divulging their affliction. I think the admission form should be filled out correctly, and proper assessment of the person going to a hospital by skilled people to ensure that they are aware of their affliction, even if they don't divulge it, because I saw many patients that wanted to go here and there, such as toilet privileges, and they couldn't do it, but they wouldn't. They refused assistance. So it's, we've got to look at this from the staff point of view as well.
Mm.
And I think the it behoves them to properly assess that person before they're admitted.
Mm.
And it causes all serious problems. So there's two sides to this story. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And I think it's really important because a lot of people also may not realise, it might be they don't want to divulge, but it might be that they don't realise how bad their vision is. And when they're at home in their own environment, perhaps their vision isn't that bad, and it's maybe when they're exposed to a strange environment in a hospital, people who can cope reasonably well in their own area may have problems. And I guess that brings me to a point I did want to make in closing, and that is, I've been in hospitals for many different reasons, for my own illnesses and for having babies and for taking babies to hospital and for taking my husband to hospital. Every single time I've had very good experiences, but there's also been experiences in each experience where I felt very judged for various things. And I think it's very, very, you're very vulnerable, and it's very easy to think that the hospital staff are drawing conclusions about you, and I'm sure that they are. But the end that you have to learn to get to is to not care what they actually think of you. And it's a time when you are really exposed. And I think it is one of the things that makes those unpleasant interactions worse is that you end up feeling bad about yourself, about how things are. And really, you're in a situation where you can control very few of the elements. And that's why we wanted to have today's session, to talk about the things you can control and the things that we can try and change for the better. So I'd really like to thank Susan and Martin for being so honest and for sharing today. And particularly I'd like to thank Helen Badge, who's come from Sydney, especially for this weekend, to talk to us today. And she's been at the convention listening to the sessions. And she'll be here for a little while after this. And I know she's happy to talk to people or, as she said, to collect contact information. We're very keen on the NPC to get people's input into this, to know what your experiences are and particularly what your thoughts are on what a successful interaction with a healthcare provider would look like. So if you have thoughts, we'll be putting things out in BC News and similar, but if you have thoughts, our email is npc@bca.org.au, and we would really like to have as much input as possible. And in the meantime, I think you should all, when you go home, sit down and think about the five most important things that you would want to happen if you were going to go to hospital. Maybe put it into your phone where you've got your emergency ICE and emergency contact information. I can say this because I haven't done it yet. and design your hospital care plan, just like your bushfire survival plan, and I think that's a really good piece of advice. So I'd like to thank everyone for this morning's session and for making it so useful, I hope.
Thanks, everyone.